This is Specific Objects, Talks on Art in the Catskills, and I'm your host, Miriam Atkin. For this inaugural broadcast of the show, I'm delighted to have with me here in the studio, Charlotte Stickles. Charlotte Stickles is a Hudson Valley-based movement artist, performer, and educator with an inquiry around how dance lives beyond its more traditional Western performance and pedagogical settings. She's been featured in film and music videos, collaborated with choreographers and playwrights on virtual and physical performance works, and presented her own performance and print work in galleries, public spaces, and on screens. I know you're involved in a wide variety of disciplines, and my sense is that all of these different creative practices emerged out of your early interest in dance. So I'm wondering if you can talk about that, talk about how you first discovered postmodern dance.
I grew up training in classical ballet and modern dance and went through, of course, the teenage period of questioning and rebelling against everything. And in those years was coming upon a major distaste for what I was perceiving in my dance training and in my performance work at that age, which was, you know, a lot of ableism, hierarchy, things that I was not really aligning with in those years, and frankly that I still don't really align with. But as I got older and I was lucky enough to have more diverse experiences as a student and a performer in the workforce, I kind of fell back in love with dance, and specifically for the way that it connects us to our humanity. And I feel that it's not only relevant to our culture right now, but kind of necessary in terms of how we are investing more heavily in technology and artificial intelligence and moving forward, forward, forward. And I feel, and I know that there are so many people around me that feel a really profound desire to slow down, be in their bodies, connect with people, and just take it backwards a little bit. I went to a university that was really geared toward expanding the field of dance and had a lot of opportunity there to study the tributaries of the dance field and sound and set design, production, writing about dance, dance theory, history, analysis, and had an opportunity to travel to Brazil and perform. And there was a really specific memory that I think kind of launched me in a particular direction, which was I was in a school, an elementary school, and recess came about and all the kids ran outside with their boombox, put on Beyonce, and danced for 2 hours together, every single kid. And that was in a moment where I was feeling like, why am I standing in a room full of mirrors every day, staring at myself? What's the purpose of this kind of esoteric propaganda? And that really grounded me in the fact that, oh, I would be a fool to walk away from this. This is universal. This is a universal language, and there's more here and more to learn and more to dig into. And so that's the seed, I would say.
And you studied in Ohio, right?
Yeah, Ohio State University Dance Department.
I'm actually surprised to learn that they had like a forward thinking dance program, and I think that's just my association with Ohio.
So was I surprised. Yeah.
But I also imagine that being in Ohio and practicing the kind of dance that you were interested in meant that you didn't, I would expect you wouldn't have anywhere to perform or talk about your work, like, outside of the university walls. Is that true? Is there some kind of scene in Columbus that...
Yeah, it's true and it isn't true, which I think that I had the same expectation. And when I decided, okay, yeah, I really feel so committed to this department, what's happening here, the research, the professors, the chair. And then I moved to Ohio and felt a little bit like, man, I think I'll probably spend most of my time in this building. Mm. And was really humbled by the community, like the sort of underground arts community in Columbus. When you have a university that large and that international, there's everyone, every person in Columbus. And just, I think that I really valued and still value and lived on the West Coast after Ohio, experiencing different regional cultures in the U.S., and the Midwest, yeah. And, you know, the West Coast. And I grew up in the Northeast. I grew up in the Hudson Valley. But there's something different. And then sitting in that contrast, you know, reaffirms, shakes up, realigns, and challenges what your values are. And as an artist in that kind of developmental moment of coming from, like, really classical training and the sort of, like... feelings of that. I think it was really important to have to shift my expectation of Ohio because there is a lot of opportunity. And of course, in a Big Ten research school, there's research funding.
Right.
And that is a whole, I mean, to have that privilege is major, really major.
Yeah.
So work is supported.
Right. And who are some of your teachers there that you see as sort of putting you on the path that you're on now, and what kind of traditions were they working in?
Mm-hmm. So many. My freshman year, I studied with a dancer and a former gymnast, a Danish woman, Anne-Sophie Clemensen. I ended up working with her after I graduated. We studied Bartiniev with her, which is a sort of floor work tradition. And my body was so taut from ballet and so vertical. And so you can imagine the philosophy that comes along with learning how to soften your body into the floor and give your weight to the floor and think about, oh, what is my weight? Mm-hmm. How do I even experience that in my body? And that's what I mean, too, just about, like, dance being relevant beyond the container of a dance studio or a dance performance. When you're applying these concepts into your body, it ripples out into your whole life and your way of engaging with the world. So right away, floor work was a major, wow, this is something else. Susan Hadley was the chair of the department at that time, and she was a dancer for Mark Morris. And I was training with B.B. Millers, an incredible choreographer and a major mentor of mine, really an opening into postmodernism and really an opening into how to teach class in that you should arrive with your curiosities and your questions. And that's enough a lot of the time. Like, if you're really engaged with your research, you can walk in there and look around and be curious and present, put on Leonard Cohen and have a great class and people will follow you.
Right.
Which I love, that philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And Nora Zuniga Shaw was heading the sort of intermedia tech department. She's a major mentor. She's doing incredible work around the concept of livable futures in dance and technology. And then Eddie Takeda, I mean, there's so many people, but he gifted me the metaphor of a hunk of butter in a hot pan. And again, it's like a dance concept, but it's also a philosophical concept of how to, like, soften into your container and take up space while doing so, but in a really gentle way. So yeah, I was extremely fortunate. The list goes on with the teachers, but I quote them all the time in class now, and they come up into my work all the time, and it's an incredible place to study.
And so you're still making dance. You're also acting in films, mm-hmm. and you're choreographing music videos. Mm-hmm. You're making zines, you're writing, and you're teaching. How did you end up opening outward into these other disciplines? I guess another part of that question is, was there something about contemporary dance that, I don't know, left you wanting more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. When I graduated, I moved to Bellingham, Washington. I found a travel brochure on my mother's countertop with a sailboat and a sunset. And I just thought, I think that feels energetically where I need to go next after the Midwest. And I started working with this dance company, Bellingham Repertory Dance, which is an amazing, about 10-person collective, democratically run from the inside, which I really valued in terms of renegotiating what dance company hierarchy looks like, mm-hmm. and how we're deciding who to perform for and what to perform and why, and asking all of those questions. And they're also committed to bringing like rigorous dance into a small, more rural community, which I also feel passionate about. And I was teaching movement and movement rehabilitation there and dancing for this company. And I think I eventually started to feel stuck creatively and needed more, just wanted to feel ambidextrous. And I think that has a lot to do with this feeling of insularity in the dance field, and this lack of communication. Like, what are these other streams of communication and access so that we can really effectively express what's happening here? Because what's happening here, the way that I feel it, is like when I go to a rock and roll show and I see someone wailing on their guitar, and it's so visceral. And frankly, it's what I feel when I'm dancing, when I'm improvising. It's this full body flow and just like you're ripping into a cheeseburger or something. It's like delicious. It's really delicious. And that is not always communicated, and through performance. And so, yeah, I started to really question that, like the identity or the profession of dancer didn't feel like enough for me anymore. And it didn't feel connected to that thing that I had felt in Brazil, for example, where it was like, everyone is united on this front. Everyone is united in this idea that dance is like a direct pipeline to joy and to expression and connection and embodiment. And so how else can I help people and myself feel that feeling and spread that butter? So then I decided to move back to the East Coast and kind of jump off the safety cliff a little bit and see if I could get work outside of dance as a creative person.
So one of the ways in which I know you is through small press, small publishing circles, mm-hmm. and you have a zine called Future Fields. Mm-hmm. And that seems to me like a beautiful way to communicate some of the things that movement artists think about but may not be entirely visible to audiences. Mm-hmm. But yeah, communicate them to non-dancers or communicate them to people who have bodies, who... you know, have who experience their bodies in all sorts of ways and could benefit from thinking about movement and inhabiting a body a little bit more deeply. you know, through the words of dancers or non-dancers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I wonder just what the experience of making the zine, distributing the zine, putting out the zine, how successful do you feel it has been in communicating these ideas from dance more widely?
Mm-hmm. The idea for that zine came from a thought that dance performance should be accompanied by a manual of movement scores and drawings and ideas that came up in rehearsal. Just the same thing, but in a different language, so that people could have another road into watching and engaging with dance. Because like you said, it is the experience of having a body, and movement is, dancing is everywhere. I'm sitting here constantly moving my hands, shaking my hands as I try and convey what I'm thinking in my mind, and you're sitting here nodding and holding your chin, and there are all of these gestures and articulations that we have, and then you just turn the volume up on those things and we're dancing. Future Fields was a project that I started with in collaboration with the Field Center in Vermont, which is a dance and media residency center, and my dear friend, one of the co-founders of the space, Jared Williams. We had this idea to create a sort of Lynchian zine about dance and open it up to, just as you said, dancers and non-dancers, these voices that come from bodies, and keep it really wide and broad and dry and mysterious, and you know, all the stuff like style textures that we love. How successful do I think it's been? I mean, I still think that it needs so much more consistency, and it needs more context. Like, maybe all of these things need more context. They need to sit together. And I do feel kind of still curious about the manual with the movement, that there's a village. You know, there's a house and a general store, and that all of these things need to be in collaboration with each other. But then again, like, what is success with something that you make? Yeah. And it was so much fun to see how people were connecting with it, people that I know and people that I don't know, and curating this, what ended up being this like 60-page zine, just because of all of these people that I have met along the way who wanted to be involved and whose work I admire, and being able to bring everyone into that was such a delight. And as you probably get the sense, I'm like a very restless creative person, so something happens and I immediately kind of launch into another something that needs to happen, and it goes like that. But Future Fields is, yeah, it's something that I think needs to continue to exist, because it centers embodiment and physical thinking and draws a common thread between all of these disparate art makers, and that common thread is body language, body speak,
right,
physical sensation, and the experience that we have sitting down wherever you are right now, listening to my voice and how that's landing in your body. And that's a physical experience, and that's a dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking about what you said about context. And I think about all of these very particular and individualized lines of inquiry that all of us artists take up. And, you know, they're all super weird and maybe unintelligible. I think that something like a zine comprised of, you know, scores for dance or reflections upon movement, it can come off, or when regarded in a certain way, it can be seen as something that's too specialized,
mm-hmm.
too rarefied. But I always like to argue for, you know, or to advocate for people to put lots of effort into things that feel really strange and unintelligible. And I think that the context that can arise, or the life that can arise for something like that, something like Future Fields, is in the way that real life human connections crop up around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, even if a zine that arises out of contemporary dance might not on its own seem to have meaning for, I don't know, someone who works in landscaping or a brick mason, but if you are out in the world and making work in the world and meeting lots of people and talking to lots of people, especially in a region like the Hudson Valley, where it's so you can't only interact with people who are like you. It's mm-hmm. just not possible, because right. there aren't, right. you know, it's the small town kind of thing. You get to know everybody.
Right.
And I think that just, yeah, being a person in the world who interacts with other people,
yeah,
it creates a context. And everyone, I feel like there's this potential for everyone's weird pursuits to find their way into everyone else's worlds.
Yeah.
No,
I love that idea. And I think it is important. And I mean, that's, energy builds around those things, and then they develop their own personality and nature and recognition by those who encounter them. And also, Future Fields and a lot of my work stems from a research question of how to make the felt, the ephemeral, the abstract more colloquial. And how to create a like casual engagement around, or a social engagement, or a, like, we're drinking beers at the metal show kind of engagement around contemporary and postmodern dance.
Yeah.
Which is so kept, you mm-hmm. know, in our like color blocked linen mm-hmm. outfits and our neat hair and our short bangs. You know, I'm literally talking about myself. and, you know, how can we have both of those things? How can you be so in your style and yeah. in your lane and in the textures that delight you, and also be conversational about mm-hmm. those things? And so that's sort of what I am drilling into with Future Fields, and with a lot of all of the tributaries of my work. Same with the film's work. Even though I stumbled into it, it's I'm still asking those same questions to myself as an artist, and you know, what is the purpose of this, and who is it for, and how do I speak to these people?
If you're just tuning in, this is Specific Objects, Talks on Art in the Catskills. I'm your host, Miriam Atkin, and here in the studio with me is Charlotte Stickles. So I want to ask you a bit about your work with Time Space Limited, or TSL, which is a community arts nonprofit in Hudson that you've been aligned with for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the conversation that we've been having so far about contemporary dance and access pertains perhaps to your work with TSL, because it's a community organization that's been around for a long time. So yeah, I'm wondering how, well, what has your work been with TSL, and what kind of channels has that opened for you, for your practice, as far as connections with the larger community go?
Well, I am an enormous fan of Linda and Claudia's, and my work there began because I saw some archival footage of a work they made, I think in the 80s, although I could be wrong, 80s, 90s, probably the 80s, called Paper Play. And it was my first time in the building, and I hadn't met them at all yet. And I sat down and was just completely enamored with this work, because it also felt almost like hearing your own language in a foreign country, or maybe that's not the right analogy, but the feeling of familiarity in a foreign environment, or like I understand this language that they're speaking, but I know it from a different vantage point. And what I'm really speaking to when I say that is, I feel that Linda writes text, Linda Mussman, so I'm speaking, one of the co-founders, writes text in the way that I move, in the way that I dance, which is the sort of deconstructing, reconstructing navigation of language. And so I introduced myself to her after and told her that I wanted to perform for her, and that's how we met. And she looked at me like I was a little crazy lady. And I just sort of nudged my foot in the door and started working and contributing any of my efforts to the building. I was teaching a contemplative dance practice, or facilitating a contemplative dance practice there for a little while. And then I had to go away for a job for a number of months. And when I came back, we started working on a new performance work that kind of reactivated the theater company portion of Time and Space Limited, which was its origin, was a theater company that Linda Mussman and Claudia Bruce had together. So that has been amazing. And we worked on this piece, Said and Done, which we just finished a run of at Center for Performance Research in Brooklyn. But we worked on that piece for about 10 months, creating a language and a connection and a chemistry together, whereby we could deliver text and move through choreography, but also do a whole lot of improvising, which is my favorite way to perform, and live in the world together, and also let the world evolve each night that we performed. And but yes, it was a harmony that just felt so effortless, but also an incredible challenge for me to start to really use my voice more on stage. I have mainly been employed silently with dancing, with writing, drawing, designing sound, and this work, I was asked to deliver a lot of text while moving. And that was a new physical experience of lung capacity and, you know, speaking from my belly, and that's going to have an effect on my moving, my movement. And so, yeah, I am just, it has been an incredible honor to work for them and learn from them and be in the space of collaborating with your mentors is really so special.
So I had the pleasure to be in the audience at the last TSL performance of Said and Done, and I found the show really captivating. It was funny. It was beautifully weird. It was kind of dark and bright at the same time. And I have lots of questions about it. I guess one is So it's, you know, Linda Musman's show, but my sense is to some extent it was composed collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that work as far as the conception of the piece, the composition of the piece?
We began with a lot of what felt like recess and playtime. Hmm. And Linda brought in some texts and scripts that she had written years and years ago, some more recent. She brought in drawings of floor plans, which are really just squiggly lines on an 8x11, and some ideas. And then Claudia Bruce is an incredible performer and really has the kind of improvisational gall that you want to work with, someone who just makes a choice and goes all the way there. It's so easy to work with that kind of performer. And they were asking me to bring a compositional element in terms of crafting movement and designing the space through moving bodies.
Mm.
And so all of those things just stirred in the pot for a little while until we landed on a structure, and Linda brought in new text all the time, all the way up until our last run of shows. I don't know, there's some of that like unspoken, inarticulable magic with when you're working with collaborators where you're just on the same plane.
Mm-hmm.
But also we were working on that piece for, like I said, 10 months, which is a long time, a beautifully long time to get to sit back as something takes shape and evolves. Lots of improvisational games, lots of try this, lots of really like laughing so hard that I had to go outside, take a minute and a glass of water and come back in because we would just be so silly together. And yeah.
So maybe it's a good time to play a clip from the show. And this clip is really interesting to me because you don't vocalize in it, but the sound that you're making in the room as you move across the space or move through the space is very audible and very much a part of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So let's listen to this clip.
To begin again. Where was I?
Where were you?
Where was I?
Where were you?
Where were you?
She did.
Where she where? When she when?
Yes.
She yes.
Then she then.
No she no.
Blue she blue.
Red she red.
Then she then.
Mad she mad.
Shout
she shout.
Fly she fly.
Run she run.
This is maddening.
No form.
No structure.
Like at the end of the day,
where the children are played.
Nouns here and there,
verbs abused,
adjectives lost.
Paragraphs, sentimental. Sentences, fragmented. Where was I?
Questions, questions, I kept asking things. Questions remain unanswered, unsure, unmoored. We swoon in this dance as we grace the globe. We linger, we float like riding on a luxury liner on the sea of change. Ha, more about that later. More about that later. I have to find a copy of Camus' The Fall. I need to know what he was thinking in 1956. What do you think? What do you think?
When I listened to that clip, What comes to mind for me is a lot of questions about the role that authority or discipline plays in this piece. And I think a lot about Linda's role. So she's sitting in what looks like a kind of sound booth or light booth that's sort of situated at the edge of the stage. She's facing away from the audience. You and Claudia are facing the audience. Linda's presence is very directorial, and sort of half. She's in the performance, but she's also not. She's kind of this hovering directorial presence. And in this clip, the nature of the text and the way it's delivered, I almost feel like Claudia is either a school teacher, or she's a child who's imitating a school teacher, in the way that kids do, probably in order to unconsciously vent some frustration with the authority that they have to face every day at school. And then the way that there's this rhythm that governs the speech and the movement. It's very audible in that clip. And it gives me the feeling as an audience member of something that's imposed, that is dictating what is said. There are these kind of grid lines on the floor that are visible, and I think it's during this clip that you and Claudia are kind of like moving along those lines. Mm-hmm. And so how to pose that as a question. I mean, I guess there's two questions there. One is, I'm curious how you experience the different roles. What is your role? Like, you and Claudia are both wearing white coats, and you're on stage, you're facing the audience. So yeah, how do you experience, or how would you describe your role? And then in general, I guess just wondering what your, as a performer, when you're inside the piece, is there some kind of feeling of authority or discipline that you're thinking about and negotiating?
These are wonderful questions and really fun to think about now. I think having finished what I perceive to be the end of our performance schedule, because in the work, I try not to attach to any concept of who I am and or why, and instead stay in a place of almost like airiness. That way I can respond to what's happening. And that particular percussion that I'm doing with my feet in that clip is set. Some of the percussions that I'm doing are set, some of them are not. But my role is really to respond to the equation of lighting, text, sound, energy in the room. And the audience is definitely a part of that equation too. Like, we really feel what's happening in the room. Early on in the rehearsal process, we were working through a text that eventually got cut, and Linda gave me like a really brilliant piece of critique, which was, stop trying to explain the text when you say it. And she has a value of letting things be just slightly apart from their meaning, so that the meaning is flexible and the meaning can glide all over the table. And we're just sitting here presenting it with a little bit of a wink and a head tilt. And I think that ended up being my character role, if there was a character, which was remarked back to me. Like a little bit of cheekiness in the loft and drop of the piece, the tone of the piece, a loftiness, and then a real drop into politics and philosophical reference, and the feeling of interrogation, and then another beautiful loft of a lighting show and dance, and then a drop back into something a little bit heavier and offering a bit more discomfort as an audience member. So I think Claudia and I are managing all of those things, and we're managing them inside the set design of what is to us Linda's front and what is to the audience Linda's back, which I think creates this, like, she's controlling, she's dictating, and also we're the audience is seeing what's happening in her head a little bit, like these two kind of funny characters walking around in their lab coats, kind of behaving like children. And then, like you say, there are the metrics, the numbers that happen that are referenced throughout the piece. And that does create, I think, a feeling of measuring ourselves against something predisposed, or measuring ourselves against authority, which we're moving against this stationary figure with her back to the audience at the front of the stage. So, and most of our text is set as questions that go directly to the audience, like, where do you stand? Where were you? How did you feel? Did you? Did she? Would you? Would she? And so there's like a perpendicularity, I think, to a lot of it. And as I sit here talking about perpendicularity, I'm being percussive with my hands, and I didn't realize that. So yeah, that was my role, is like connecting the dots, but not too tightly, keeping them a little bit wobbly, letting meaning arise for people.
Yeah, that actually, there's this moment where Claudius says something like, what do you stand for?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then she stands up. Yeah, and just like this very playful way in which the meaning of an utterance is being demonstrated in so many different ways. And like what a word refers to isn't always outside of the space. It's right there. It's like the thing is there, and the language that's referring to it is there. And it's this very entertaining kind of assemblage of language and reference. I think we have to wrap up. And I would like to ask, what do you have upcoming? Is there a performance coming up in the Hudson Valley or New York City? What's
on the agenda?
Yeah.
I last year shot a horror movie called The Shade. I played the monster. And that is set to come out in theaters and streaming this year, although I do not know exactly when, but looking forward to feeling the metabolism of that out in the world. I'm just getting started on a project with a dear friend of mine, J.J. Mitchell, who is one half of the musical group Overcoats, and we're working on a visual album to accompany some musical work centering around topics of truth and identity and always communication and access is sort of where I'll always land in one regard or another. And I'm still teaching a lot in the community, and I think that that's really where I learn the most about effective communication is through a teaching practice and bringing in abstract physical ideas and laying them out on the table and trying to make them fun and casual and playful, but also rigorous and intellectual. So we try and do that in dance class, my collaborator and I, Maddie Leonard Rose, and some music videos and things, but it's a smattering at the moment of lots of new research and work with TSL. We are starting a new performance work as well, a new play.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be it in about 6 or 7 months. We'll be performing again.
Well, I'll look forward to that. And where can people find your work online?
I have a website, charlottestickles.com. I'm on Instagram as @lunarlot, LUNARLOT. And I believe that's all at the moment, although I'm sure you can find some more just with a name search. That's all I can think of for now.
Well, Charlotte Stickles, thank you for talking with me today, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, Miriam. It was a lot of fun.